quarter than our man Wild Bill. He was Cupid earlier this year. It's got to be distracting shooting free throws.
Yo, 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 what's up, my Aggies? How are you today? Got a great show for you in store. You know, it's me, Wild Bill. I'm in studio with my boy, Kellen.
What's up, dude?
And today we got a...
Every time, I can't not do that.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'll change it for season two.
I freeze when I get ready to start, mm-hmm. So whatever. But, you know, today we have a pretty cool guest, kind of a unique... situation. He redshirted for Stu Morrill, played for Coach Duryea, and just finished up his senior season, graduated for Coach Smith. Really excited to talk to him. Quinn Taylor, what's up, man?
What's up, dude?
Nothing much.
Thanks for being on the show.
Glad to be here.
Cool. Yeah, you're the party, man.
Yeah.
We're excited to have you. So, Bill kind of talked a little bit about your years at Utah State. You're probably the only player to play with three separate coaches at Utah State. So let's go back a little before that. Talk to us a little bit about, we want to do this with you, especially because you're such a recent grad, and so far we've talked to older guys, mm-hmm. So it's not as cool.
And they're not as cool.
They're not. Yeah. They're definitely not. I think all of them almost had the old logo, even. That's how old some of the guys are.
Hey, man. They're all my buddies.
I was just saying, you're rocking the shirt, so it's fine. Yeah. But talk to us a little bit about how you ended up in Logan, what your high school career was like when you were getting recruited. I guess start from even AAU, whatever you were doing back then.
Yes.
Where you're from, I guess. Yeah. People probably want to know that, too.
Yeah, yes, not a Utah boy.
Yeah, I'm from Houston, Texas. Born and raised, grew up, lived in the same house my whole life. Kind of got lucky with my recruiting, I feel like, to Utah State, just because nowadays college recruiting is all based on AAU, and it's, you need to be playing on a team that's traveling around the nation basically to get to the schools that you want to be. I mean, coaches look at high school games, but it's, I feel like, heavily weighted on who you play for, who you're playing against in the summer, and
do you feel like that's because of the overlap of the seasons a lot, or
I just think it's easier to assess talent because you know the skill level of all the players. In high school, you can get players who are really good, but then also just because it's based on where you live, you can have teams that are really bad. Okay. So if there's a player in Utah who's really, really good, coaches want to see him go up against players from California, Texas, all over the nation because they're like, oh, those are where better, there's there's more people, so the quality is going to be higher.
I see.
So for AAU, I just kind of played with basically my friends from second grade on through high school. We played just with my high school team basically at AAU. And there's enough tournaments in Houston where we didn't have to travel. But I mean, grew up playing against like the big teams in Houston. There's the Houston Hoops, Houston Defenders, Houston Hoop Stars.
Anybody notable come out of any of those places?
Yeah. So Houston Hoops. I think the last time I played them, the Justice Winslow, Justin Jackson, Kelly Oubre, De'Aaron Fox, but he wasn't old. He wasn't on the, because he's younger than my brother, so I'm a lot older than him. But I mean, they've had a lot of pro players come through their team. And I mean, almost everyone every year on those teams go D1. But it was for us, I mean, me and my high school friends and teammates, we were able to hang with them most of the time, for a half or almost a game, but then they have depth, we don't. So kind of AAU ball was just, it was fun because growing up in Houston, it's a lot different than Utah. We'd walk into gyms and teams would look at us and be like, we're gonna smack these white boys, because we're mainly all white, and then we'd go out and beat them by 30.
Dang.
So it was a different experience, but I got lucky. I was playing in a high school. It wasn't a tournament, but they had our district playing against another district, and they preseason ranked, okay, one, whoever's picked one is going to play the one from the other district, just see which district's better. And Coach Duryea was there looking at Kendall Hill, who played at Weber State. He's mm-hmm. a kid I grew up playing against. He's from Humble, so pretty close to my house. And they played the game before us. So Coach D was there, and he watched that game and then was watching the rest of the games and just saw me, and he contacted my coach. And Coach Smith had – or not Smith, Coach Jones.
Yeah.
He had recruited a point guard who's 2 years older than me from my high school, who ended up at Lehigh, but had a relationship with my head coach, and then just kind of got it all rolling. And I was actually recruited to Utah State as a preferred walk-on.
Yep.
And I think for me, I mean, I was just happy to go somewhere because most of the schools that were looking at me, I mean, there were a couple D1s, but it was like Air Force. I was like, I don't want to go to the Air Force because I don't want to be in the Air Force.
Yeah, because then you're done. No more basketball afterwards.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there were a couple D2s or whatever. But I knew I was good enough to play Division I, but I feel like had I played on a different AAU team, I would have been offered a scholarship because I felt coming out of high school that I was a scholarship player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to go to a school and just be on the team. I was wanting to go to play, and I knew that if I got the opportunity, I was able to show, and I was able, thankful enough here at Utah State, I was able to get that opportunity, was able to show what I had.
Yeah.
But I think kind of it all lucked out. Me wanting to go on a mission and things, I mean, that definitely played a part in coming to Utah State just with their history and
the culture.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just the coaches knowing how to deal with those players. I think that's probably one of the things the new coaching staff coming in is kind of, because it's different.
You're learning.
You're recruiting some kids because you want local kids or kids from the state. And it's like, oh, well, we're recruiting you for 3 years down the line, basically, because they're like, oh, you're going to go on a mission. So just coming into Utah State with the coaching staff with that in mind, knowing that, oh, I was going to redshirt, go on my mission, because back, I'm not too old, but I'm kind of old. So back when I was there, my first semester is when the age change happened. So
what year was this?
That was fall of 2012.
Okay.
So October of 2012 was when the age change happened. So I was already at school. I mean, I wasn't old enough to go right out of high school because I was still 18, but mm-hmm. then they changed the age. So I was like, well, I'm already here, so I got to finish my redshirt year.
Yeah.
But I think that was a good thing for me because I was able to learn kind of under – just kind of how college basketball is. And then when I got back, I kind of already was used to it and was able to just get right into it.
So did you feel you could develop your freshman or your redshirt freshman year with the team a little bit, learning college ball, playing, you know, as a redshirt? And then did you feel like you lost anything when you went away for 2 years?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was able to develop and just get kind of accustomed to the speed of the game, because I think that's the biggest difference coming from high school to college is just the speed of everyone. I mean, you're playing against, instead of maybe one or two good players or great players every night, to the whole team. I mean, everyone's in college playing basketball for a reason, because they're mm-hmm. a great athlete.
Because they were the top at their school.
Mm-hmm. So just getting used to that speed and just but also I think being able to play kind of, but not really play. I mean, being in practice or playing pickup and just realizing that I was good enough, kind of mm-hmm. just getting that under your legs, like, oh, like I can play with these guys. Like I'm good enough. I'm going to be able to play in college, kind of. So that, I think that was good.
Was that with like Danny Berger, Sean Harris, Spencer Butterfield?
Yeah, we had, so Danny, Sean, Spencer, Preston.
Oh yeah. Preston was still there. Now the Texas boy.
Keyshawn was the only senior. Reed. Yeah. So, I mean, that year we were set up to be a great team. We were plagued with injuries. We were predicted to win the WAC. So that was still back in the WAC.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really the real WAC because we had UTSA, UT Arlington.
Oh,
it was
right.
kind of the weird WAC. But I mean, we were killing it in the preseason, got to conference season, and Keyshawn, or well, Danny went down in preseason with his scare. I mean,
right.
And that was something for me then, because I actually had a heart problem, not what he has, but I had to get an ablation done. And it was kind of after Danny went down that I kind of started paying more attention to my heart.
Right.
Did you have that before Danny? And then you just started like...
So I had, growing up, there would be times where my heart just starts beating really fast, but I thought it was normal. Like, I was like, oh, this happens to everyone.
Normal
just,
for you.
Yeah, because it was just something. It wasn't all the time, but it would happen, and I would have to sit down and kind of get my heart rate low, and then I would be fine. So it's like, I had thought everyone had that, but then I didn't really pay attention to it. But then Danny went down in practice. It was a crazy practice.
Yeah. Just, oh, you were there?
Yeah, I was there.
So did you watch the defibrillator and everything?
No, because, I mean, I saw Danny. I mean, they told us kind of get up to the locker room, so we were all kind of making our way over there. I didn't actually watch, but it was just crazy practice. I mean, it's every day or anytime I see Mike, I always remember it, and I'm just grateful Mike was there, and he acted as fast as he did.
We actually had Danny on just before, and he kind of goes into the depth, and Danny's dad, Brian, was actually on with him, and he says, you know, that it just everybody had to do their job, down to the paramedics, the people who take care of their vehicles, everything, and just kind of it all just worked together to, you know, work perfectly and save his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so going kind of... I paid more attention to my heart after that. Yeah. I had to get a little procedure done after my, what was that, sophomore season.
Okay.
So I just, there was a little, like, what they call it, an extra pathway. So I get a stress-induced extra beat, and then this little muscle or little thing that's not supposed to be there just kind of took over as a pacemaker and would go make my heart kind of fluctuate and go crazy.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And then since then, I get going to AFib.
Yeah.
But I was, that happened to me. I've had it 3 times since my procedure.
And so, is this usually you have it, is it all on the court?
Yeah. It's, I've never had it outside of basketball. It's a more physical stress induced. But now, I mean, I can feel it coming on. So the past 2 times I would kind of stop myself before it happened, but I just take medicine and it's all good. The first time I went into AFib was actually right before, so my junior year, right before the Wyoming game. I didn't travel to Wyoming because of it. So I had it at practice, and because it was weird, because with my other thing, I was able to naturally just either bear down or kind of slow my heart rate down. With AFib, I wasn't able to control it. So they actually took me to the hospital, or I went to the ER, because we called Dr. Bunch, who's a cardiologist.
Danny's cardiologist.
Yeah, so it was good. I mean, I worked with him. And he just said, go somewhere and get an EKG. Went there. I mean, it was late, so the emergency room was kind of the only place. Went there, and they were like, well, gave me medicine to try to lower it. Didn't work, so then they actually reset my heart. I mean, I was out. I don't know what they did.
Wow.
But they just kind of shocked it back on, reset it.
And holy cow, dude.
Wow, that's insane.
So since then, I've kind of been good. And I just have medicine. If it ever happens, it's something that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. But I mean, it's just take the medicine and let it work its course.
So was there talks of you not playing basketball? Was there advice given that, hey, maybe Quinn shouldn't be out there playing ball?
So my sophomore year, before kind of heading to the tournament in Vegas, Mountain West tournament, I didn't practice leading up to that because I wore a halter monitor, which is basically a EKG that's on for 48 hours.
So I had to wear one for a week once.
Oh,
that's actually, if you've seen my Winnie the Pooh costume, that's why I wore the Winnie the Pooh costume.
It covered it.
Because I didn't want everybody to see that I had a monitor on.
Mm-hmm.
I was wearing, actually, I was covering up those things.
Uh-huh. So I actually wore it in our last game of the season against UNLV. Since my episodes only happened when I was exercising, so I had to wear it while I played and practiced to try to recreate it so then they can see what it was. And I actually had an episode. They said it was like my heart 250 beats for like 10 minutes or something, like what it registered. But since it's kind of almost making like your heart spasm, so it's not the whole heart going.
Right.
So the readings are a little different. But yeah, so I had that and then had to get a, I actually went the day we were flying out early in the morning. I drove down to Dr. Munch's office and got a cardiac MRI.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at everything. They're like, well, there's nothing here. They did the MRI basically to just test or get rid of all the like things that could prevent me from playing. They didn't see anything. So like, all right, this is what it is. It's probably an extra pathway. You can still play. You might have a kind of, your heart might go crazy a little, but it's nothing that's lethal or life threatening. So you can just play through it like you have been. Was able to do that.
Well, so what do your parents think? what does your wife think at this point? Like has there been talk of you not playing, or was it always, hey, they said it's okay, I'm going to play?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, my mom and my wife probably were a little more skeptical, but it was something.
Because they're moms and wives, yeah, man, yeah. That's how it is.
But, I mean, being able to talk with Dr. Punch, I mean, I've gone in there with my wife, and he's been able to explain things, and even Dr. Harrison, before I'd seen Dr. Punch, was able to explain a good amount, and I appreciate everything that he did, and was able to talk to my wife and kind of explain what it was and what it's not.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's probably important.
That's the thing. What it's right. it is. Anytime you're dealing with your heart, got to kind of take. I mean, it's the most important thing. So you got to pay attention to it. But yeah, for me, there was never thought. I mean, kind of a little, but I was like, I've had it. I've played basketball this long. I should be able to keep playing. And it's not something as life-threatening as Danny's was. Where, I mean, his was basically heart attack and crazy. Yeah. Or my AFib is, it feels weird and it's hard to breathe and things of that nature. But right now, I mean, the biggest thing you're at risk for is kind of later down the line, if you get it, is blood clots.
Oh, okay.
So for now, it's like, I'm not on blood thinners or anything.
Have they talked about putting you on them? Because they suck.
Yeah, I think later down the line they say that. But for some reason, there's a random kind of occurrence in tall, slender athletes and AFib. I mean,
oh really?
Apparently, that's what I learned. That I mean, there's been many NBA players. I think, I don't know if it's true, but I've heard people say like, oh, Hakeem had them.
Really?
Larry had them. Like, people have had them before, and it's for some reason it's the opposite of most people with heart problems. It's tall, slender, athletic, kind of active people, and it's just for some reason.
Yeah, because I'm your quintessential heart problem patient. I'm like the poster boy for a bad heart. Mm-hmm. But like, you would think a guy in shape like you, or you know, Larry, any of those, you know, well known Larry Bird, you know, wouldn't be.
Yeah,
you know, so that's crazy that it's crazy to learn that.
Bill's mad at the
mic. I'm getting crazy.
Yeah. So yeah,
that's
so
crazy.
It's been a process, and for me, I mean, the good thing is like talking to Dr. Bunch, he's like, and if you're planning on playing overseas, it's like you never even, like after the procedure, it's like you never even had the problem. Like, I mean, so for me, I'm cleared. I'll pass any physical, any if I mean any heart tests. I mean, I don't have a heart murmur. I don't have a irregular beat. It's just a random occurrence. And I think that's the scariest thing for me is that it's random.
Yeah.
So it was like, after I had the procedure, my first time I went into AFib, I was freaking out. I was like, I thought I fixed this, like, but what happened?
So do you know now, like, if it was to happen, oh, this is AFib, I know the feeling, I know what it is, it's easy to point out,
because it feels a lot different. I mean, it feels kind of similar to the episode that you used to have, but a little bit more, a little discomfort and kind of the chest or breathing a little bit, just because of how they're saying what, when they explained it to me, is kind of just some of the blood's not flowing completely through. So it's kind of a little backflow. So you kind of feel that. But basically whenever it would happen, I would get really short of breath really quick. Like, my heart's beating fast, but it's like, I just like can't run because it's like, oh, so it was anytime. I mean, in my sophomore year, I'd pull myself out of games because I would get in games and just,
you just pull on your jersey to pull yourself out.
I would tell coach and then just go sit at the end of the bench, kind of reset. And I never had it two times in the same day. So I knew once I had it, I was good, kind of good to go. So then
got
I was
it
like,
out
all
of
right.
The way.
So, and then also since it was a stress induced thing, it kind of, I started playing on myself where I think later towards the end of, before I got my procedure, I was thinking too much and causing it.
Oh, because you're worried it was going to happen.
So, and I don't know if that's the same for the AFib because I've only had it a couple times, but it's like I can almost, since it's a stress-induced thing, it's almost I can play myself into it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, that's a part of what I've...
So get into like some yoga right before or something.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So you got recruited into Utah State by Coach D. It was like your first contact with the school.
Yeah.
And then you came and redshirted with Stu, so you saw how he operated. When you came back, was Coach D already the coach at that point?
Yeah.
So how did that go when you heard?
Yeah, what are your thoughts there?
So I was actually, I'm on my mission, and I get an email from Coach D one P-Day saying that Stu's done. He's not coming back, and that coach, he's like, and they're not even looking at me for the job.
Oh, really?
He said that. He was like, they're not even considering me for the job right now. So I was like, oh, dang it. Like, I'm gone. I mean, I'm screwed. I just redshirted. I wasn't really heavily recruited. I was a walk-on. I'm going to not have a spot when I get back. And so I was like, oh, this sucks. Like, what am I going to do? It's like, I emailed my high school coach, and he was already starting to reach out to people to try to figure something out. And then I think a couple weeks later, or I get an email from my dad actually, and he says, no, Coach D is going to be the coach. It's like, what?
I thought he wasn't. He just told me.
I thought he wasn't even being considered. But all things considered, I mean, I don't know what the whole process here, cause I wasn't here, but I mean, it ended up that he was able, I mean, he was the coach. So for me, I was happy cause I was like, okay.
Probably elated, right?
I have my spot back. I know what I'm doing. Because it was like I was getting back, and I got back home from my mission, was in Houston for 4 days maybe, and came straight out to Utah State and started workouts because it was in the middle of the summer. So it was like.
So how is that coming back to play for the man that recruited you but was the assistant before and now is your head coach? How do you change gears there?
I mean, for me, it was different. Just in the fact that now, he was the head coach. But also I think that I'd been removed for 2 years, that it was just what I knew then when I got back.
Okay,
I didn't have
like,
that
coach.
It wasn't like, oh, he was my assistant last year and now he's my head coach. Since I had the 2 years removed, it was just, oh, it was normal. Because I mean, it was still, the coaching staff was basically the exact same. I mean, we had Coach D, Coach Felton, Coach Jones, we have Coach Wilson, I think, was there already. I don't know. I don't even remember now.
I think he was there.
I've gone through so many coaches.
Yeah, I've been through a few staffs.
But then, so it was just, for me, it was my coaches, and then it was kind of then getting, because no one on the team was on the team when I left.
So it was
completely different. Yeah.
Wow.
There was not a single person from my redshirt year that was still on the team. Marcel was still playing, but he was already at UVU.
Was Sean not playing when you came back?
No, he was thinking about possibly Jiang, because that was after his last year. So actually,
that's right, because he went out with Stu.
Because Sean had also, he emailed me on my mission. He was like, hey, you want to live with us? So I ended up living at the stable.
Yeah, that was the stable is what Sean Harris, Danny Berger, Spencer Butterfield,
Jesse
Parker, they all called their place. Yeah. I stayed there for a few months after I was...
Yeah.
You know, my buddy had died. I went crazy, went hitchhiking, came back, stayed there for a few months. It was a great place.
Yeah. So he in the email, he was like, I'm thinking of probably GM. So I was like, oh, that's cool. I mean, at least I got Sean. I mean, I know Sean from when I redshirted. I'll be living with them. He'll be helping out with the team.
So Jalen wasn't.
He was. On the team. I'd played with Jalen, but he was a freshman. He was not a freshman yet because I'm a year older than him.
Oh.
So
okay.
It was going to be his junior year when I got back.
Oh, okay.
So I had played pickup with him. I mean, him being in Skyview, but he wasn't on the team.
Oh.
And
so
then,
that's fresh. Everything's fresh for you.
Yeah, because it was like my freshman class when I was redshirted, Riley Bradshaw and Quincy Bear, they both left. I mean, Riley before the season, Quincy at semester didn't come back. Marcel, I mean, he was my roommate, but then he ended up down at UVU. I mean, so he was gone. Even of the kids we recruited, only Jalen stayed. I mean, Vico wasn't because he was getting recruited still. He played the year after I left, and then he was still on the team kind of for half the year my freshman year, but then kind of just stopped showing up. But I mean, I knew Vico from his visit, and actually he's cousins with one of my cousins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's cousins with everybody.
Yeah. Hey, he's Paulie cousin. I mean, I'm not Paulie, but I'm true cousins with my cousin. But okay. He's Paulie cousins with my cousin. So I had known him. But yeah, I mean, because then yeah, Jalen I kind of knew, but everyone else, I mean, didn't really know. D. Cole was on the team for that short few months when I was on the team before he left. But it actually, I think everything just ended out working out how it did.
How did that affect you and the rest of the team when D. Cole decided to leave? And D. Cole is David Collette.
I mean, I think it affected me probably the most because had D. Cole stayed, I don't think I ever would have played.
Oh, really?
Because with him leaving, it opened up a spot, kind of a void that the team needed to fill. And I think I was able to get an opportunity to get on the floor because of that. Because had he stayed, I probably never would have touched the floor. I mean, I played a lot of five kind of that year because we just needed, I mean, we had Lou, me, and Elston Jones, who were the fives or the bigs, and then even the four, we both. So had D. Cole stayed, I think he would, I mean, he's a great player. He played great his freshman year. He would have been on the floor unless he was in foul trouble, basically.
Yeah.
So with him leaving, it opened up a spot for me, and I was able to later down the line in that year prove myself and be able to start getting minutes. And then,
so what was the mindset with the team? Were they angry with him, or were they like, we understand, or was there just like not really a thought of it?
I think a mixture of both. I know Jalen had said, because going into the whole coaching change, I don't think a lot of the returning players were wanting Coach D as the coach. I wasn't here, but kind of the consensus that I felt was they weren't too keen on him being the next head coach. They wanted to get someone else or whatever it was. And I think D. Cole was kind of the one who was like, oh, no, give him a chance.
Yeah.
That's what I had heard. I wasn't there, but I've heard. And then so after he left, Jalen was like, you're the one who wanted a chance, and then you leave. So, I mean, it was those first couple of years was just a different experience compared to this last year, just in the locker room and the chemistry and the players that we had to I think this year and the success that we had was just, I don't know if it was they just were not wanting to play for Coach D or what it was or what, but I mean, any coach kind of can coach, but it has to be the players to buy in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit of the lack of success that we had my first couple of years was just we didn't have the locker room to buy in to the team. And it kind of came down to that where you'd kind of see a little bit more selfish play and then it rubs off on everyone else.
So did they obviously bought in this year?
Yeah.
What was it? Was it Coach Smith? Was it his personality? Was it just somebody brand new? What made you buy in? What made everybody buy in on Coach Smith?
I think the energy that Coach Smith brings is in something that's infectious. You talk to him and you think he just like snorted cocaine or something. Just his energy, like he just. But that's the type of guy he is. He's just high energy every day. He's gonna bring it.
Dude, he's a coach we haven't seen at Utah State.
Yeah.
And I love it because he loves the fans. He interacts with the fans. It is awesome.
One of my favorite things is like the beginning during like when they're calling our names out. If you look over at Coach Smith when the herd's going crazy and doing like their side to thigh, he's just watching them with a huge grin. He's like, oh my gosh. He loves that.
Really?
Because at South Dakota, I don't think they really had that as much. And I mean,
I don't think anybody has it like we do.
I mean, you come to Utah State and the culture and the students and the fans, it's crazy compared to other places. Where, I mean, we played at Fresno this year. We were number two, like two of the top teams in the Mountain West, and it was dead.
Really?
That's crazy.
Your team is fighting to be champions of the league. You're top three in the league. It's like you have another top team in the league and it's dead. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
So it's like you come here and you get Nevada and the place is packed and you got Bill being Bill again.
that was fun.
No, when I saw Bill before the game, I was thinking he needs to get up there.
I've told this story a few times, but I walked into that game. I knew Bill was up there. We had texted.
Yeah.
But I walk in the door and he was at the top, like right in front of me, and people were talking to him already. And then at halftime, I came around. to say hi again. And Sean and a bunch of other people are standing over there, and like his wife is collecting money. Like, he'll do it for the right amount. And we all pitched in like money to get him to take his shirt off again.
Yeah, and it was worth planning it. On it. Well, I didn't want to do it. And then looked at my much? Wife and like, she's like, dude, they're going to pay you. You might as well. I was like, all right.
Yeah, awesome. Don't do anything for free if you're good at it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's so funny. I think I appreciated that more. The most you have Sam who grew up being an Aggie fan and seeing you and Abel, and but coming some of the other the foreigners or the other recruits, they don't know the history, but it was like, I think my red shirt, you kind of passed on the torch.
Yeah.
So you did it a couple games, maybe one or two.
Yeah.
But then you kind of passed on your torch. So I was like, being able to see that again, I was like, oh, there's Wild Bill.
Yeah.
That was fun coming down to the court pregame and seeing you. Mm-hmm. Because I had forgotten that you were still playing. I was like, oh, yeah, I still do have a really close friend on the floor. So I was excited to see you out there, and you balled out, man. It was a good game.
How did that game compare
to any other one in your career? Like, would you say at Utah State that was one of the best ones you played in?
Yeah, I think it was – I think and like kind of just everything about that game was just crazy for me. I wish I would have been able to play more and not foul out, but we had, there were seven players who foul out from each, seven starters total. So it was kind of bad in that regards for me. I was like wanting to play, but just the environment and the fans and just everything about it was amazing. I mean, cause it was like we were playing for Mountain West tournament or regular season championship basically against a ranked team. National TV. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
really solid team.
For us to, and also, I mean, our first game of conference play was at Nevada and we laid an egg. I mean, we shot like 20 something percent. We were terrible. I was like 0 for 8 in the game. So it was just, it was everything building up to that being senior night and was kind of you storybook ending. You're right. And it's like, oh, this is perfect. You're going to end your year at home against top team in the conference, one of the top teams in the nation. Going to win and then kind of go on.
Does it get any better than that?
For me, it's playing one of the best games I've been a part of. And then also, I mean, my redshirt year, Idaho at home, Preston hit a big shot to send us in overtime. And that game was crazy.
That was a big
game. And for me, just being a part of, because I mean, anytime you're, and then also, I mean, this year at the pit when Abel hit his huge shot, I mean, that was to be at the pit and hit that shot, it was just.
Yeah.
Insane. So, I mean, because I had gone into the pit and been down 30 in like 10 minutes before because it's a hard place to play at. So, I mean, this year just...
How does the pit compare to Utah State?
I mean, it gets loud and it's crazy, but it's... I don't know. It's not as many students, I feel like.
Okay.
It's more just kind of old-timers. I mean, you got Snake there who the first couple of times I'd been there, he hadn't been... at the games with the past two times he'd been there. He's just a crazy guy.
Is he really that intimidating? Is he
during the game? He's kind of crazy. Like if you're sitting on the bench, but apparently after the game, he's completely normal. Cause like he went up to, I think Abel and just like was talking to him normal and stuff. And Abel's like, what? Cause he's like painted face, has the color contacts, everything.
Wow.
Gross.
But I mean, you look at the schools, I mean, San Diego State also, I feel like their student section isn't that big.
Yeah.
I mean, these places get a lot of fans, but it's not dedicated where almost half your seating is students.
Probably not as organized in their cheers and chants.
I mean, they try to do some of the things we do, but it's not Utah State,
who
so it's not
better?
As good.
Who wore it better, us?
Yeah.
Hands down.
Well, I actually have a fan question that's kind of in regards to what we're talking about right now. So this is from Michael in Boise, Michael Tippetts, and he just said, I'd like to know why they were so good last year. We expected to finish near the bottom of the conference and with a new coach and a really young team. How did we end up playing so well? It's a two-part question. He also follows up with, will we be as good next year without Kata? So we'll get to the Kata question in a minute, but we've kind of alluded to it as far as Coach Smith's energy, you know, those types of things. But I mean, you guys going into it, knowing that you're picked to finish near the bottom, and knowing that kind of the culture in the locker room and the things like that, what kind of, What are your thoughts going into that? And then did you guys exceed your own expectations? I mean, I imagine you guys play with all the confidence you can, but kind of lay that out for us a little bit.
No, I mean, I think what made this team so good is, I mean, if you look at the traditionally good teams at Utah State and the type of players they had, we had this year. Just the team first, the hard-nosed junkyard dogs that are going to do the dirty work and just do what it takes to win. I mean, it's hard to win, and to win consistently is even harder. But just the players that we had and the players that left kind of were the players that weren't that type of players. So, I mean, everything happened, and people, when Coach D left, and then we had players leave, and then the players who stayed were the ones that we knew stayed, not because of a coach, but because of the team.
Yeah.
And they wanted to win.
Yeah. Well, and I would say on that note, you stand out in my mind as a player this past year that accepted the role given, especially with Kata coming in, and we're really relying on him as a defender as well as somebody that we can get the ball to down low as far as movement with plays and things like that. But you quickly, early in the season, I saw like, wow, Quinn is really taken on, you know, if he's a four, he's a four. If he needs to be in as a five, he's a five. And you kind of embodied, I guess, that kind of a mentality is like a team first, like whatever it takes kind of. Junkyard dog, as you put it, and I think that's you're kind of the epitome for this team in my mind of like what that is and what that looks like. So I just wanted to give you that little bit of shout out. I noticed we talked about that as the season went on. Me and my friends, as we watched games, were like, man, Quinn's kind of taken whatever. You kind of remind me of D Favors with the Jazz, where he's like, when Rudy's off the floor, I'm going to be the five and I'm going to work it as best I can. And you kind of embodied that as well. So yeah, that team first mentality definitely came through in your in your play especially.
Yeah, I mean that's something for me. My career at Utah State, I tried to do. I mean, coming in my freshman, when I started playing, I was a five, but I wasn't really a five. I never played five. I'm listed at 6'8" on the roster, but I'm definitely not 6'8".
What about with shoes on?
With shoes, I'm 6'7".
Okay,
right there. So I mean, it's not too big of a stretch, but I mean, just kind of for me, I knew if I got on the floor, I'm going to do whatever it needs be for the team to win. I mean, I'm someone who, if we win a game and I have 0 points, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. If we win a game and I have 20 points, I'm fine. But if we lose, I'm not. And
right.
I think the whole team was embodied that. I mean, if you look at it this year, I think we have six different players score at least 20 points in a game and be leading scorer on the team, or seven. I mean,
God,
just
that's crazy.
The type of team we had. And I think it also started with Sam. I mean, you have the Mountain West Player of the Year, who is going to be diving on the floor, going to be taking charges, who is going to be guarding their best player. And when you have that type of leadership from him, and then I think I was able to kind of be the leader for, I mean, I'm the oldest guy on the team. Been around for a while and just show the new guys kind of what it takes. But when you have that type of leadership, which I feel like we had faulted the years past, where your best player is going to be trying his hardest, he's going to be going the hardest in practice, talking the most. I mean, I think back looking at like practices when Preston was playing, I mean, that's the type of player Preston was. He was going to be getting on people. The coaches didn't need to get on someone because Preston would yell at them if they weren't doing what they needed to. Or Spencer,
he yells at me when I'm not doing it.
Bill's not doing his stuff.
When Bill cooks his steak wrong,
I mean, that just kind of competitive spirit. I mean, looking back at when I redshirted, I mean, you had Preston who's like that, Spencer, Danny, Sean, like people who hate to lose. And when you have a culture like that, it's not that they hate to play bad. They hate to lose. So they're going to be putting the team first, not trying to put themselves first. And that's what we had this year. And just, I mean, when you have a player like Namias Keita, makes it easy to, you know, you can guard, you can press up because
they're not going to want to drive.
They get by you, they're going into him. So, I mean.
He seems like a pretty fun guy. Is he a fun guy? Like off the court, just like. Yeah, he seems like he has a lot of fun on the court, but he just seems like, hey, I'd like to chill with that guy.
No, he's I call him my son. he calls me his dad. So it's been good. I mean, he's just a player who you can tell he's still, 19? Because of some of the mistakes he makes. And but he's someone who a couple times maybe got in his own head this year, but he was really good at just playing free. Because basketball is a 90% mental sport. I mean, if you're in your own head, you can't play. And I think that's also one of the things that led to this year's success was the confidence that Coach Smith instilled in everyone, last one of us, allowed each player to go out and just play instead of go out and think.
Yeah.
Because when you start thinking, then you start messing up, you get in your own head, and then you start in this, it's hard to get out of it.
Yeah.
But when you're going out there and you're messing up, and but Coach Smith's like, no, keep going. Or I think one of the first practices, he's told it on, I think, a couple of his radio shows, is Brock Miller had a wide open three and he didn't shoot it. He blew his whistle, stopped practicing. He goes, Brock, you're a shooter. Shoot it. It's like when you have that type of confidence, yeah, coming from your coach, you're going to be playing to the top of your ability.
Yeah. But playing without fear of making a mistake is like a really powerful position to be in, for sure. I mean, I experienced that just playing in baseball. I remember having coaches. I had different coaches, and sometimes you definitely aren't afraid to make a mistake, and you tend to play better.
I heard you guys had a practice where you practiced helping each other up. Is that true?
Well, that was one of the first practices. Someone fell on the floor, and like some people went over to help him up, and the coach blew the whistle. It's like, no, someone falls on the floor, you have to run to him. Every single person in the gym, run to him to help him up. And I think it happened again. It didn't. Not everyone went. We started running a little, and then after that, it was anytime anyone's on the floor. I mean, you look in the games, someone's on the floor.
Yeah.
All four of the other people on the floor are running over to pick him up. And I mean, that's just the culture that Coach Smith brought. And I think that's also it helps you put team first.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And just build that.
There's no way you couldn't put your team first when you're running to help a guy. Yeah, yeah, everybody's exactly running to help a guy.
Yeah.
So it's just, and that now was.
Me and Bill, we have to help each other out. That's.
Yeah, we're too big.
Out of the golf cart.
Yeah.
So, no, but hey, real quick on that note, we went golfing yesterday, and this will be a note for Brady's podcast to follow up on that. We did walk yesterday.
Yeah, we walked.
Unfortunately, we only got through 2.5 holes because the groups in front of us were taking forever. So I just wanted Brady to hear
proud
that.
Proud of y'all.
Yeah, we made the effort. We didn't get the cart. So. Yeah. But no, that's kind of cool. Coach Smith kind of instilled that in you guys, and, mm-hmm, and that you guys adopted it. I think that's also a big note, is that you guys had the foresight to be like, oh, this is what he wants out of us, and this is what we want out of each other, kind of a thing.
So what does Aggie basketball look like next year, with Kata or without Kata?
I mean, it's going to – you still have – I mean, you're bringing back Sam Merrill, who's a great player.
Absolutely.
And you're bringing back – I mean
– and his Aggie blood runs deep.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you're bringing back a great player in Sam, and then just – I mean, who left this year was – graduating was me and Dwayne.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you still have a lot of the production coming back. I mean, they just signed a 7'2" kid.
I saw that yesterday.
I mean, I saw him. What was that? Monday. I saw him, and he's
legit 7'2"?
Have you seen this video?
Like, looking at him, he looks a lot bigger than me. Just like height. And I was just like, this kid's huge.
I always think it's funny when I see a tall guy next to you or Brady or any of my basketball buddies, it makes you guys look small.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How does that happen?
And then I go stand next to you and I'm like, my neck hurts right now just trying to talk to you.
It's like sometimes I'll be walking like on campus or something. I see someone from the distance like, wow, that guy's tall. And I walk by him and he's like 3 inches shorter than me. Like, I'm a freak. Like, it's like if he looked tall to me, like that's what it looks like. I must look so weird to people. Yeah. But it's like, for me, it's just normal. Like, yeah. I don't really recognize my height until that happens, or like I'll see myself in a picture. I'm like,
oh,
yeah,
there it is.
Wow, those people are short.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched the YouTube video of this kid that we just signed, and he's athletic, is what surprises me. For being over 7 foot, he can move. And his dunks, like, he almost hits his head on the rim of jump because he can actually jump, not where it's like just, you know,
like Mark
Yao Ming. Yeah, or Mark Eaton dunk where he puts it in. He can move. He can pass the ball. And then I was shocked at how many threes he was shooting and making. So hopefully he's got a jump shot. It looks like he was impressive. So.
I mean, that would be really good. I mean, for us. I mean, that's the thing. Anytime you're going to add a body like that, mm-hmm, it's going to affect the game.
Yeah. Well, I think it opens up a player like you to come in and kind of be amoebic in their role. And that's actually a really positive thing, I think, in a lot of ways, because it I think it opens up the playbook a little bit too when you're like, hey, we can run this play with Quinnen or, you know, whoever mm-hmm. it may be. And imagine if, you know, Kata does come back next season and we yeah. have these two guys on the floor. That's going to be pretty tough to score on. Mm-hmm. So no, yeah, that's yeah. exciting.
I mean, I think they're still going to be a good team. I mean, one of the reasons we were successful this year, I mean, when you add a guy like Nimi, you're going to have wins. I mean, I was talking with Spencer Nelson a while back and he asked me a question and he was like, how many games do you think you would have won without Nimi? I was like, I still think we would have got to over 20 wins or about yeah. 20. So, I mean, he probably accounts for probably eight of our wins.
And
probably.
Spencer Nelson, yeah. the former coach yeah. and yeah. former coach player.
And just yep. and he was thinking the same thing. I mean, but, I mean, we were still a good team. Mm-hmm. I mean, going into the season, we knew before we even had Nimi, we were wanting to do something special. We knew that we could just because of the players we had. I mean, the skill level that we have, I mean, you look at people and it's like, oh, me, I was a preferred walk-on. Abel Porter was a preferred walk-on, Justin mm-hmm. being preferred walk-on. But it's like we really were scholarship players. We just
yeah. Yeah. chose to be.
Chose here. To, yeah, that route because, I mean, it just worked out and what we wanted to
now,
do.
Nimi joined the team late, right? Yeah. That's why you're saying even before yeah. Nimi was
because
on the team.
Because we had gone through almost all of summer workouts mm-hmm. and he wasn't there because, I mean, he had him in sign. I think they were. With foreigners, there's always the eligibility issue. Yeah. They making sure that he didn't get paid when he played overseas. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
because actually it was funny because I was talking to Sean at this past week and how
Sean
he,
Harris,
yeah, Sean Harris, and he played for in Portugal in mm-hmm. Nimi's hometown.
Oh, oh really?
And he was saying how when they got a new coach, then that's when Nimi left and was no longer playing for like that organization and went to Benfica, which is in Lisbon. Because of the coach, and Sean was saying the whole time he was there, he's like, "We should have." He was like, "Why do we got a 7-foot kid from here, and he's not even playing on the team? Why is he not on the team?" So it's kind of funny how it goes full circle right there. But with Nimi, I mean, he's a great player, and he was able to help the team. But I still think no matter what happens next year, the team's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
You definitely want Nimi back because it's right. gonna it's yeah. not gonna hurt the team. It's yeah. only gonna help the team. But also, though, next year is going to be different because everyone's going to be hunting for us.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
this year,
it was unassuming.
Sleepers.
Yeah. This yeah. year, everyone was just like, oh, whatever. It's just yeah. Utah State. We've beaten before. And
so, Coach Smith, he brings something to the table that just is mm-hmm. just magic. Like, you know, he helped bring back Spectrum Magic because he had a bunch of magic of his own, mm-hmm. if you ask me.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's going to be good, just hopefully from the start of next year, is the Spectrum picks up where it left off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the kind of the things that it played in this year was me as a player, I was looking at the season football was having. So mm-hmm. I was like, all right, we just got to do our part kind of, and we'll get it back. We'll get the fans in there. Cause I mean, football, when you have a team performing that well,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be excited for basketball, oh, for because sure. you're coming off that high still. And
exactly.
You're like,
and we want more, yeah. more spectacular sports.
So mm-hmm. it was great for, to see that success in football and then us to lead it over. It was kind of funny because we were at coach's house like 2 weeks ago and they put together a little highlight film, and just to see the fans from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, just kind of the mm-hmm. the progression yeah. of kind of more, you see those ugly seats and then no longer see the seats.
I love those ugly seats.
I do too. But so hopefully, I mean, everything that happens is, I mean, Nimi, he's going to go. I mean, he's got the drafts, what, Wednesday next week?
The combine.
Or, yeah, the combine. Yeah. And then, mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to work out. And, I mean, the type of person Nimi is, he wants to do something special still. So,
yeah.
I mean, for me.
So, do you see him staying, possibly?
I mean, I think, for me, if I were to put myself in his shoes, I don't think I would come back. But him being not me, I think there's a possibility. I mean, everyone, who knows what he's going to hear at the combine?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if you're a guy and you hear, we'll take you in the first round, you leave.
Yeah.
No matter what. That's
yeah.
guaranteed
yep.
money. That's it's like, what, it's like almost $6 million in over 3 years is guaranteed, basically. You're crazy not to take that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, I mean, he has good people around him. The coaching staff is 100% supportive of him. And that's one of the things also that I think is good. Because looking back to after Jalen's junior year and how he did some workouts. I don't know how happy the coaches were with that.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
They probably didn't want to lose their bread and butter.
But with Nimi, these coaches, if they're going to be telling them to go if they think it's the best for him, because those are the type of people they are.
Mm-hmm.
And also because they understand if he goes, that's recruiting for us. I mean, you can say we took this kid who was unknown and he was one and done. It's like,
yeah.
Even next year, but it's just...
I mean, I think most Aggie fans out there want to see him come back.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I'd love to see him back in the Spectrum next year. I just don't know how long we can keep him.
It's it's the part of me that's selfish and wanting the success for us and not for him. But I mean, anything, I think he has the right people in his life and the right people talking with him and telling him, and he understands what it is. So, I mean, the good thing about all the process and how they changed all the rules, I mean, he was able to hire an agent, been working out, and it was actually good because, I mean, the agent can pay for food, hotel, travel. He was actually able to fly his mom out to the States, so he was able to see his family.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Because of those things, I think. So, I mean, it's been a good thing for him, and he's been able to be just working out, kind of, so... I think he'll hear what he hears, and I mean his decision is his. And for him, I mean, I could see it go either way. As a person, I mean, I want to see him back at Utah State because I know if he comes back, it's going to be another special year. But even if he doesn't, I know the talent and the coaches that we have, and it's still going to be a good year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This year was no fluke. You know, mm-hmm.
This
was a combination of great coaching, great players, and just an amazing mindset. And you know, it was awesome. It was so fun to watch you guys.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a fun year. And I mean, So as on Nimi's side, it's like, I want him back. Just the selfish part of me. So whatever happens, and I wish him the most success he can at the combine. Just
because
even if it is, I mean, he comes back and then just even more exposure for. Hopefully us even more if he goes and performs well at the combine and comes back, and then more TV exposure, more national coverage for just Utah State in general. So it should all work out in the end. And I mean the coaching staff, and they have everything set. I mean they know if it works out or doesn't. I mean they're gonna still come out and produce what they've always produced and be the same type of coaches and recruit the same people or to be successful.
Now, with all this talk about Cade and his professional career, let's talk about yours a little bit. You just finished up your senior season. You graduated. What's happening now? What's going on?
So now it's just the process is to find an agent and hopefully find a good fit overseas. I mean, that's been fun. It's weird because everyone come up to you, so what are you doing? It's like during the season, like, what are you going to be doing next year? It's like, well, I hope to be playing. But it's no one really prepares you for that or tells you like, all right, this is what you're going to do after the season. You're going to do this, this, and this, and then you're going to have a job overseas. I mean, kind of, I think in other professions where you use your degree, you kind of, I'm going to apply here, and here.
Right.
But it's like now it's like, all right, so you're going to talk to a person or find someone to represent you to then go and talk for you.
Yeah.
So this person doesn't really know you.
Right.
And you don't really know what their intentions are. So good luck.
Do you interview the agents? Is that how you're selecting one? Or just word of mouth from other friends that have done this?
Talking with former players, coaches. I mean, I had a good long sit down with Spencer Nelson. Talked to Sean Harris. I mean, Danny Berger. I mean, even Gary, I was talking with Gary at this Gary past Wilkinson. Weekend, and just people and just telling them kind of what they did or how they felt out or if they liked their agent or what. And I mean, one of the things Spencer Nelson told me was just, he was like, you're going to be talking to, I mean, he told me talk to as many as you can because you don't want to shut the door to anyone before talking to them. I mean, you don't want to. And then he's just basically, you're going to just feel it out. I mean, you can write a list, pros, cons, or whatever, but you're going to get the vibe from them. And one of the things that he told me that was important, he was like, ask for player contacts, people that they represent.
Oh, nice.
Talk to the players that they represent or are representing.
Right.
because I mean, in a business where you're kind of, I mean, it's kind of like college recruiting. It's not, you're not lying to people, but you're always putting your best foot forward.
You're only showing
yeah. the good where you want to
it's get, like LinkedIn yeah. versus your Facebook.
Yeah. You want to get the full feel.
Yeah, I know that they were showing like videos of the mm-hmm. Spectrum to some basketball players
yeah.
when the Spectrum was hot. Yeah, when right. it was not.
I mean,
as hot.
I saw videos of the Spec when it's showing Wild Bill and
yeah.
you seeing Ty dunking on and Brady's dunk and all these things, mm-hmm. and you're like, I want to play there. And then you get here and it's kind of been down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it's, I feel like that with agents mm-hmm. is kind of that they're, I mean, they're trying to say these things, but you want to find one that's just honest, kind of with you. And you can get that feel talking with people. I mean, if they're promising you all these things and you're like, you can't follow up on that.
Yeah. So I know there's lots of agencies and agents and things like that. Does one, like how many players is one agent typically responsible for in the world of international basketball?
I think it depends on kind of the agent and the agency. I mean, there's, a couple agencies, I feel like they just try to get as many and every, cause I think they take right, quantity mm-hmm. over quality. And then there's the other way where it's quality over quantity. And that's something you kind of have to feel out. It's kind of difficult because when you're talking with international agents, I mean, they can say like, oh, we represent this person, but you're like, I have no idea. This guy's Italian. This guy's
mm-hmm. yeah.
German. I don't really know who they are. So just being able to talk to the players that they represent has been a good help because they're going to let you know how it is and let you know if they're honest and let you know kind of if they're satisfied with the work or not. Kind of the performance review. So I think that's one of the big things that I took away from what Spencer Nelson told me was just kind of feel them out. I mean, you're going to get to know them. You're going to be working. If you choose to work with them, you're going to be talking to them a lot. And just feel them out, talk with them, and kind of get their vibe. And then it's going to come down maybe to a couple, one or two, and maybe it just lands on one, and you're like, all right, that's what I'm going to do. But yeah, I'm in that process right now, and I'm hoping to get one signed here, hopefully a week or two, because kind of you want to be signed with an agent before the end of May.
Yeah.
Kinda just because that's when most of the leagues, or if they're in any of the championships or playoffs, are ending up, and then teams start looking. I mean, you want to not sign super, super early where you don't talk to others, but you want to get signed so then your agent can get out and start putting the word out, and you can get the spots before they all get filled.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm in that process. Still haven't signed an agent, but I've been talking with and. I mean, also for me, I mean, I'm married, so it's,
right.
I mean, anytime I talk, I'm always on speakerphone, so my wife can just hear and listen.
Good call.
So then she can also get the vibe and like, oh no, I like that guy. Oh, right. I don't like that guy. Or I like this. Or, I mean, she's not really talking with them, but she's just listening yeah. in coast. So she yeah. can get that feel from them also.
That's cool. And then from that point, if, you know, you go to Europe or wherever it may be, international, when does their season typically start, or would it be all over the place depending on what country it is?
Definitely depends on the country.
Depends on the country. Yeah. But I think typically for Europe, it's, I mean, most people leave, I mean, August, late August.
Yeah.
They want you over there for kind of mini camp or whatever they call it, where you, like, I know they'll fly you fly out, and then 2 weeks later, my wife will come out, and they want you out there by yourself working out kind of with the team. And it just, also you don't fly your wife out because you could get cut.
Yeah.
yeah.
Be it that, and you don't want to be moved, and then you don't have a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I believe it's kind of more kind of late August.
Okay.
Typically for most of the European. I think then when you get, I mean, South America is different.
Right.
South Pacific.
Yeah. Yeah. Over Australia and
yeah.
Korea. Yeah.
They Asia do them all over, yeah.
So I mean, we're hoping, I mean, kind of for a Western Europe country, just so mm-hmm. it's more
familiar.
Yeah. A little more similar to the States than not. Right. I know, I mean, with me, I mean, living in Brazil for 2 years, I think I should be able to live anywhere.
What about Australia or New Zealand?
I mean, my wife would love that. Her being Samoan, I mean,
yeah.
We're actually in June, we're going to go for 2 weeks to Samoa. So
awesome.
It's gonna be fun, but yeah, I mean, she definitely would want to end up there, but yeah, I mean, for me and her, I mean, it's great to have someone who's supportive and knows that the life of kind of a could be living in a different country every year, and just mm-hmm. who's supportive of that and wants to embrace that.
Yeah.
I mean, she's someone who, wherever we end up, she's also wanted to embrace the culture.
That's cool.
And yeah. I mean, that's what you have to do to survive over there. I mean, I think you get players who end up going and just kind of going crazy, stir crazy, because they're people go to practice, go back to their apartment, go to practice, go back, and they don't go and experience
right
the culture or the country, or they're like expecting to eat American food, but you're in Italy or you're in Germany. It's like, go and enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So having her and her support and wanting to go, I mean, kind of want to stay out of Eastern Europe just because I just don't think I would want to live there.
Horror stories?
A couple. So, yeah, but I mean, so it's kind of that. I mean, just for her sake also, where if I'm gone, that she feels comfortable going places or mm-hmm. doing things, not with me.
Right.
So, whereas I feel like if I'm Eastern Europe, she's probably not going to want to leave the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's just that. But I mean, that's also things that I'm telling my agents. I mean, they know I'm married, and kind of the ones that are also looking for the best interest of her also.
Yeah.
So it's been a fun process. I mean, we've been talking to a couple. There's a couple that we like.
Cool.
So hopefully here shortly I'll have one and then get that part behind me, and then it's just waiting on the contract or waiting on to figure out where I'm going to play.
Yeah.
What are you going to miss most about Utah State? The playing here, Cache Valley, just all around.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, I never really thought coming to Logan that I'd miss Logan. Coming my first year when I was living here, but it's become home kind of. I met my wife here and been here 5 years. I'm just gonna miss just being a part of something special. I mean, it's Utah State and athletics, and just the pride everyone has around it is something that, I mean, yeah, I'm going to be playing professionally, but it's it's not that sense of brotherhood.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people, I mean, I didn't play with Preston, Spencer. I mean, I redshirted with Sean, Danny, but it's like, they're my friends. I mean, I have them for life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bill, I mean, mm-hmm. yeah. Being able to make the friendships that I have, I think I'm going to miss that the most just because it's a part of me. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for me, since my wife, I mean, her mom lives up here. So my brother-in-law actually goes to Green Canyon. He's going to be in 10th grade next year. So he plays with Coach Smith's son, Brady. So it's, I mean, every summer I feel like I'll be ending up back here just so then I can use the facilities and
exactly.
families up here. So I'll be back in Logan.
Jump on our podcast.
Yeah, yeah of course. but yeah, I mean, just the culture, and I mean, it was great for me, my senior year, to be a part of bringing the Spectrum Magic back. And I think just missing that mm-hmm. aspect of literally just chills, where teams, you can tell, like, teams come in here and when it's going crazy, they're just like, wow, I wish I played for a place like this.
Yeah.
So
yeah. We're happy you brought it back too.
Yeah. I think all Aggie Nation is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On that note, anything you want to say to Aggie Nation before you leave Logan?
No, I mean, it was a fun ride. I'm grateful for just kind of the support they give to every last one of us. It's kind of funny because my wife will point out, like, I'll be at Angie's or be walking in through Walmart, and she'll say, yeah, people are just like saying, oh, that was Quinn. Because of me, I don't notice.
You're like a celebrity. Yeah. I mean, you become a celebrity in Logan.
And that's one of the things I think you get here, is just because it's not a tiny, I mean, it's not like a Laramie where it's tiny and no one lives there. You still got a good amount of people, and but it's still that close-knit community where everyone knows who you are. Especially if you're an Aggie basketball player, you go somewhere and people are coming up to you.
You're so tall.
Yeah. People coming up to you and
taking pictures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was just fun, and just that, kind of just letting us, I mean, the continual support that they give. And I mean, I'm definitely going to miss it. But I'll definitely be back. I mean, I'll be back in Logan, hopefully, for many summers to come.
Well, let's barbecue, brother.
Oh, yeah.
I like it.
Let's do it.
Wow. Quinn, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with us. We appreciate it. Some great insights. It was awesome to hear all that. Can you just, you know, leave us with our mantra, you know, say it for us.
All right. Every Aggie is a legend. What's your story?
Perfect. Thanks, Quinn Taylor.
Thanks.